Hey folks, welcome to the Hang Your Own Hang podcast, a monthly podcast about hammocks, hammock camping, and everything related. Our goal, as you know, is to enlighten you if you're a ground dweller, and to entertain you if you're already a tree dweller. I'm Jonathan Kupal, and this is my co-host, Mark Baldwin.
Good evening, Jonathan. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good. Another day in paradise here as the summer slowly winds down.
Yeah, absolutely. The fall is coming, and I'm looking forward to cooler camping weather.
Yeah. Last time we went out with the girls and the boys, at least Christopher and Ethan, it was pretty warm out, and I had some issues getting to bed at night, even though I was had the top quilt kicked off, and it just took a while to cool down, even though it was late at night. So I'm ready for the fall weather.
Well, today's interview is going to be a fun interview. I'm just going to warn our listeners right away. We're actually interviewing the folks from Amok, and they are in Norway. So we had to find a time to do the interview that was workable for everyone. So we got up early in the morning to do this interview a couple of days ago. So if Mark and I, just so everyone knows, if Mark and I seem a little off, it's because neither of us are properly caffeinated.
Yeah. Haven't set the alarm for 5 o'clock in the morning to get up and get ready for work and then go to the office and get everything set up and not have time to make coffee was a little rough. But hey, sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
I'm sure our fans will think it's worth it.
Yes. Taking one for the team.
All right. Well, let's get started. All right. So today I want to say welcome to the team from Amok. Gentlemen, if you can just shortly introduce yourself, give your name and the role that you play over Amok, we can kind of get started with a conversation about what you do over there and where you guys are from.
Sure. That sounds good. My name is Jonas. I'm in charge of the product development and production here at Amok.
Steinar. I'm in charge of sales and basically everything else. My title is navigator, so I do what's necessary at all times.
And my name is Diederik Abrahamsen, and I'm also called Mr. Mail. That's my professional title. So I do customer support, and I also do some marketing, and I have responsibility for our ambassadors and testing and reviews.
Awesome. So what we like to do when we start the interviews is just to give you guys a little chance to share some of your personal history in camping and also to share a little bit about how you got into hammock camping. Jonas, maybe we could start with you. Where did you get into kind of the camping experience, and then how did that lead into hammock camping? And of course, I'd love to know how that led into starting the company, starting Amok.
Okay, that's a long question. So
yeah. let's start over then. How did you get into camping, and then how did that lead into hammock camping?
I'd say I never really got into camping. It was always just a part of my life. I think that's quite common in Norway, that when you grow up, you always go on camping trips with your family, and you sleep in tents and you do some fishing, and it's just, so it's been a part of my life for as long as I can remember. And when I was young, say in like primary school, I usually went fishing after school when I was maybe 10 years old. So always been a lot outdoors. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to the hammock part, I had actually never tried that. In 2012, I was on a sailing trip in the Caribbean, and I couldn't sleep below decks because it was so warm. And I had seen a lot of people just, you know, relaxing in some hammocks on the front of their boats. And I had an idea that, okay, if I put some, you know, a bug net around that and a tarp, I could use that both on the boat because I had the problem right there, and also when I got back to Norway. So that was, I sort of had an idea, and I didn't know that it was a thing at that time. And later I realized there were a lot of people into hammock camping. It was a big thing, especially in the United States. So I got more and more into it, and then we, after a while, decided to start a company and try to make a flat hammock, which was the goal at that time.
Steiner, how about you? Is your background the same in terms of getting into camping, and then what led you from camping into being introduced to hammock camping?
Yeah, it's definitely the same for me. I come from a coastal town in the western part of Norway. I would call it an outdoor paradise, or kayaking, hiking, climbing, everything. So it's always been part of my life. But it wasn't until I met Jonas 5 years ago I heard about hammock camping at all. It wasn't a big thing in Norway at that time, so I had to get introduced to everything about the concept.
And then Dietrich, let's finish up with you. It's not safe to assume that you had the same experience as Jonas and Steiner.
Yeah. Well, being outdoors is a big part of Norwegian culture, I think. So it's like that for many people. But I think my first memory of being outdoors was actually on skis, as I got my first skis when I was 2 years old. And then from there on, I tried to remember the first time I could remember go camping. And that is probably when I went on a fishing trip to try and fish trout with my dad on Hardangervidda National Park. Mm-hmm. And he was smoking his pipe, and we were trying to get some trout in the boat that we had. And it was just a blast. And that's probably the first time I went camping. And then it's just been on a lot of trips since then. But then hammock camping came in a lot later. I had tried to sleep in a hammock at different cabins that I've been to, like the Brazilian style hammocks, where the, I don't know what you call it.
The netting.
Yeah. And, but I haven't really tried the real outdoor hammocks until I got contacted by Amok because they needed help with the customer support. And that's when I really started to kind of be interested in what hammock camping is all about. And that was in 2015, so I'm probably the least experienced guy in hammock equipment when it comes to hammock camping. But I've been on a lot of hammock camping trips since then, so always learning something new.
That's very cool. Yeah, it's interesting. Being from a northern country, the use of a hammock in camping isn't as natural just because of the needing to overcome the issues with being cold as well. And, obviously for here in the Americas, as you go farther south, it's a more natural thing to want to have something to cool you off. To get into a couple questions about Amok then, Jonas and Steiner, you guys started the company?
That is correct.
And where does the word Amok come from?
Well, actually, we had a quite a long process to figure out what we wanted to call the company, and Amok was on the table for a while, and it didn't stick immediately. And we had a Facebook poll or something on our among our friends and family, and that got really good feedback. So I think that's why we chose it. And the origin is, well, I think it's an international word. So going Amok is running crazy, going berserk, so that's the same mm-hmm. Norway. So that's and pretty much all around the world, it has the same meaning. So, and that's a bit edgy, and we like that. And it has some connotation to the Viking heritage that we have here in the Nordics. That was good, and it also, of course, sounds like hammock. And a third thing was that we wanted something that started with the letter A or something early in the alphabet. And the reason for that is just when we go on trade fairs or any kind of list, we're always at the top. And that's actually something that we thought about.
That's pretty sneaky.
Yeah, it's sneaky, but it's. But we're happy.
It's not something you think about.
No, it's something you read about in the book.
Well, it's something the guy at AAA Locksmithing Company came up with.
And I also remember it actually came second in the poll, but we still figured it's much better.
What was number one?
I really don't remember, but it's better, for sure.
We're happy about it. Fair enough.
So, going right in from the name where Amok came from and all, let's get right into the obvious question. What led you, where'd the name Drammer and its development come from? I'm sorry, I'm going to butcher that all day.
So in Norwegian, we say Draumer, and it's an old Norse word for dream. And so the Nordic languages, they come from this language. And so it's an ode to our heritage here in Norway. And we think that the word dream is a fitting word for our hammock, because we want to create a flat, really comfortable sleeping experience. And yeah, just made sense to use a word like that.
Huh. Now, I mean, your big product actually is the Drammer, and it's different than what everybody's used to, you know, going between the trees and you're 90 degrees off. It's a big risk to make something so different and innovating. What made you decide, you know, everybody else is sleeping this way between the trees, let's turn it 90 degrees and develop something else?
Well, there's a saying, there's no risk, no reward. And so that's a part of it. We wanted to create something different. And when I started making a lot of prototypes, I saw that, you know, of course, I started with some other concepts. So we were actually looking at some bridge hammocks and some other concepts to make a flat hammock. And, you know, they felt okay, but we didn't really feel that we had something truly unique. And once we started to use an integrated pad and try to utilize both the insulation properties of the pad and the structural integrity it would give the hammock, we really felt that we had something, you know, special that we were proud of, and that we felt that this is something that we love and the people that we show it to really like it. So hopefully all the people in, you know, around the world will like it as well. And we just took a risk, and I think it has given us a name and a reputation. And so, yeah.
No, that's great. And then also, I mean, it was not only making the going from the regular normal or what you ever see with a hammock to 90 degrees. I mean, you're really, it's a premium product within a smaller niche within camping, going from camping to hammock camping. And now, I mean, it's a premium product. You're even going deeper within the niche to a 90 degree. That had to have been a little bit of risk, or is that just, this is what we think and that's going to work and be popular and, you know, no risk, no reward type idea?
We want to create something truly different. And also one of the decisions we made early on was that we didn't want to be a one-man show here in Norway. We wanted to go international right away. So I think one way to counter that, the problem, if you see it that way, that it's a niche within a niche, is that we are selling all over the world, and we have warehouses now in Canada, United States, Netherlands, and in Norway. And so maybe within certain countries it's a really small market, but we're trying to reach them all at the same time. And, that's not always easy, but for now it's working quite well.
Yeah, a side question about that. I'm just curious. This is a little off topic. Now, with the Brexit change, are you going to have to put facilities in the UK for distribution?
Yeah, to continue sales the way we do now, we would have to, because of value-added tax and other, governmental fees, we would. So that's a tricky one for next year.
Yeah, it's going to be a pain.
Yeah, the navigating says so. It's going to be a pain.
It's going to be okay. I'm going to fix it, and Didrik is going to handle all the testing. It won't be a problem at all.
Yeah, funny to add here is that we have the Excel version of the drummer on pre-sales right now, and we got a lot of UK customers, so I hope we can ship to them before Brexit.
hoping. Now, another nice thing with the drummer, which is different than your normal gathered end or even bridge hammock, is that you can sit up in it. That's a pretty nice feature. Was there a lot of thought into being able to have not just a hammock that you're going to sleep in, but it's the adjustability with it as all. So it's almost serving two purposes instead of, not just sleeping, but being able to lounge in it, sitting up and do whatever.
That wasn't the goal from the start, but it came as a consequence of the development process, where once you're sewing and you're testing a lot of prototypes, you always, at least I'm always thinking, how can I do this better? What new options are there? And so the drummer, it started with just a basic flat hammock, the same hammock as we have today, but without the chair. And I realized that with the pad inside and the structure that it had, if I could add some internal panels as well, I can maybe adjust the knees and lift the head a little bit to create a pillow. And then if I adjusted the same panels even more, maybe it could turn into a chair. And so we just tried, and it worked quite well. And of course, there was a lot of prototypes involved, but it was more an added feature that sort of made us decide on, okay, this is the concept that we're going for, because it's flat and it's versatile. You have a panoramic view, and you can also turn it into a chair, which was basically just a bonus that came as a consequence of just meddling around with the sewing machine.
Huh. Very cool. Now, are you guys sourcing the manufacturing locally, or are you sourcing it? I think I read somewhere you're sourcing your manufacturing out of Vietnam at this point, right?
Yeah, that is correct. So we do all the production in Vietnam, and we have a very good relationship with our factory there. So we've been manufacturing with them for, I think, 3 years now, going on.
Yeah. Okay. And before that, you were doing manufacturing out of China. What's the experience like, working out the prototyping process and working with a manufacturing source that's so distant?
No, it's actually, it's quite okay. It's, there's a lot of emails, of course, but I visit Vietnam usually 2 times a year. To both to follow up on the production and make sure everything's okay, but also to, discuss new samples and new strategies and the future. So we have a quite good relationship with them. And so that works quite well. But I think one of the things that we do that not all companies do is that we have sewing machines and we have the equipment at our office as well. So we do most of the development here. So when it comes to our manufacturing partner, that's more of, the last refinements, and, they make it pretty, and they are the experts on the sewing. But we do a lot of, the engineering and the thinking ourselves, and that makes us, we can make prototypes really quick and, test it here in Norway. And then once we're satisfied, we can do the last adjustments with our partners in Vietnam.
Yeah, that must be interesting, because you guys probably come up with, I'm sure there's a prototyping process, but it must be interesting to come up with the ideal design and then have feedback from them saying, well, it's very difficult to manufacture that way. And does that happen where they'll actually make changes to the design based on how you have to manufacture it, or is it not quite as bad because it's a sewn product as opposed to, say, something that's injected mold, and with where injection molding is going to have more physical constraints on how you can build something?
Yeah, definitely the last part there. So on the hammocks, it's quite easy to do, you know, mostly anything, but we definitely had, you know, the experience that our manufacturer says that, okay, but we can do this, but this is going to be very expensive, or why don't you do this instead? All the other, our other customers, they do it this way. And so at some points I've had some struggles. Then again, you know, we are the ones who push the manufacturing button at the end. So we can say, we want to do it this way and this way. And of course, we're always open for suggestions, but, you know, they do what we ask them to do. And they're also very eager to learn new techniques and to, you know, do things differently. Because our manufacturer now, they are making mostly paragliders and really high-tech gear. And the owners and the leaders there are really happy with our products, and they like to, you know, do things in new ways. So that's a very good experience when it comes to that. That being said, we also do some metal parts and some, you know, more in the plastic injection molding area. And then we have to listen to them a lot more because there are certain rules and certain ways you have to do things.
Yeah. So I guess the question is kind of around, you know, when you're doing that prototyping process, you have a set of steps where you're designing a feature, and then you must have to make adjustments in that feature for the realities of the materials and the realities of the cost, you know, and what your manufacturer can do. I'd love to just hear more about that, because it's definitely not a gathered end product. There's complexity here that that goes into the design.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a, you know, it's a great question. It's quite hard to answer because it always depends on the, you know, the feature that we're talking about. And but in general, I'd say that you know, there's always the trade-off. So there's always some kind of feature where you're thinking that I would love this myself. This is would just make the hammock in general better. And then it's you know, of course, we have to think about the cost and the weight, and is this, you know, does it feel right? And at the end of the day, it's usually, you know, the gut feeling that, you know, would I want this myself? Would I be willing to sacrifice some extra weight, or would I be willing to pay more to have this feature instead and maybe use this fabric that would save some weight? And so there's mostly a gut feeling. And also now we tend to focus more and more on, you know, not pushing the price down, because that's not necessarily the best way to do it, we think. It's definitely not, you know, of course, we're trying to create products that have a reasonable price, but we're more focused on maintaining very high quality and make sure we make products that last a long time and that we can, you know, be proud of, and we can have customers that are really happy with them.
Yeah, it's always interesting. You have to make a decision at some point. Are we, you know, are we driving the price to the bottom, or are we producing a premium product and standing by that? And it's clear that you guys have chosen the latter. So I've heard both positive and negative things about working with manufacturing in the Far East. And I remember one time we had I've had a conversation about who was it, Mark, that we were talking about that.
Oh, yeah.
They had, it was Alex from Tensile, where they were stealing his designs and reselling it as a knockoff. Have you guys had problems with that with your manufacturers, or problems with people trying to sell knockoffs in general, since your design is so special and proprietary?
Yeah, actually, we haven't had any problems with any knockoffs so far. And, you know, I can understand, you know, I can relate to Alex's experience. And we also hear that from a lot of our, you know, partners, and we heard about other kinds of products. I think when it comes to our product, it's very labor intensive, and it's quite expensive to make as well. So it's probably not the best product to try to knock off if you want to make a quick buck, to put it that way. And it is also a product that we have, you know, we've spent a lot of time with our manufacturers on it, and it's, you know, I think it depends on the relationship that you have with your manufacturer, and we have a very good relationship with our manufacturer in Vietnam, and so I know for a fact that they would never offer that product to someone else. I think it's different if you're sourcing a product, and if you're, you know, buying a product from China, then you're doing some small changes on it, and I think maybe the factory would feel that it's their product. Whereas in our case, it's definitely, you know, our product, and I know that the manufacturer feels that as well, if that makes sense.
So as a follow-up on the questions about your manufacturer and stuff, there's been this scam that seems to be running for a lot longer than you would expect on Facebook. What's up with that? It isn't somebody actually trying to sell a knockoff of your product.
No, it's not actually, or we have been in contact with several customers during this time. And to our knowledge, everyone who has received something from the Chinese company that has scammed thousands of people, we believe, have only received a very cheap gathered end type hammock and nothing like what was advertised. And in some cases, people have not even gotten anything. So we have had people contacting us, being angry with us because they think that we are the ones who have been posting the ads, etc. But the thing is that we have been working really hard for the past 45 days. The scam has been running,
wow.
But then the first 15 days or so, we didn't know about it, and then right before we were supposed to launch our drummer Excel campaign, me and Steiner were the only ones in the office. And then we suddenly opened the support inbox, and I couldn't quite believe the numbers that were inside. So, it's been hitting us hard, but we just feel we feel more sad for the customers who are affected by it because, but fortunately, PayPal has been refunding people if they used PayPal through the PayPal buyer protection.
Mm-hmm.
But we also posted a link to our news update on the scam, which is a 12-minute read, and then you can read all about the different companies, which all lead back to one person, except for one of the pages. But we believe that it's basically the same company that does all the different scams. So up until now, we had we have had 7 different web shops trying to give the impression that they sell a mock product. So what they've actually done is that they've stolen all our content material. So they've taken YouTube videos, pictures from our webpage, and the Steinar and Jonas have been in those videos, so it really seems legit. They've also taken YouTube videos from people who've done reviews of mock hammocks, and they've also taken pictures from our Instagram feed and our ambassadors. So it's quite a big scam going around.
Wow, that's very frustrating.
Wow.
That they want to take advantage of your reputation like that for such a paltry sum too. I mean, these are they're just selling like cheapo $20 hammocks, right?
Yeah, but I mean, it's that's the world of online shopping these days, because you have, like, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Fjällräven, which is the Swedish clothing brand. Mm-hmm. There are like these Kanken backpacks, which is a big deal. And they have had huge problems with the same type of scam. And then this happens with all kinds of products. Just for an example, I have a friend of mine who I wouldn't say is the brightest friend I have, but he
everybody has a friend like that.
Yeah, he had he saw this Instagram ad, which is kind of the way that these companies do it. They kind of create a sense of urgency. So they say that, okay, it's only $30 now for the 300 first units sold. So be sure to be quick about it. And it's worldwide free shipping. And it's just, wow, this is too good to be true. And the cases that they often are. But he thought he was buying a board where you can surf on water and being propelled by some engine of some sort. And then what he got in the end was just a regular bodyboard from China. So, and these things happen all the time. But the thing is that Amok Equipment is not that known as a big brand. So not a lot of people know about us. And these ads that I've been running have been getting millions of views and shares and comments. And so many people who didn't know about it before do now. But when other brands have had this scam happening to them, for example, North Face, there were an ad that said that now you can buy North Face tents on 90% off. And people were recognizing that North Face would never do this. So people were just hammering down and saying scam, scam, scam. And then, yeah, it would kind of killed in the early stages of it. But then when you don't know about Amok, you kind of, and you see these videos that they use, which is actually ours, it's really easy to jump on it because you don't know the company from before. So that's been a huge issue.
Well, I guess the lesson is if it's too good to believe it, it's probably not true.
Yeah. That's the key takeaway.
Yeah.
Although at the same time with that, there's also been a lot of support with the regular hammock community on, you know, in the Facebook groups and even on the forums and other outlets that did recognize that this is a scam. Be careful. You're not going to get what you paid for. Amok is not doing this. So it's got to be, comforting on your part that, hey, there's, these people are there, the usual hammock community, they're actually looking out for us, even if the general public doesn't know or, they don't know. And
definitely it's been really heartwarming for all the guys. We get emails every day from people who are either helping out by reporting the scams or just giving us new updated information. And we've had several people who have been affected by the scam who's also shared everything about their buying process and tracking and what they have received. And so people have been really, really helpful. So we feel like we have the hammock community in backing us. And that's been that's been really nice, because some days have just been rough. You get to work and you hope you're gonna have a good day, and then you open the inbox and it's just wow. How am I going to cope with this? And we are four guys. So I answer all the customer support, and the last couple of weeks have been quite tough. So it's super, I'm just super happy and super humble that people take the time to, send us encouragements and try to help us out. It's been unreal.
Great. Now, getting back to the drummer, there's a lot of adjustments on how you lay on it, on how you can move around on it and all. Is there a lot of fine tuning every time you have to use it? Or, just because, everybody's always looking for that perfect lay. And a lot of times it's, adjusting your ridge line or, the spacing between the trees and your angle, where some of it you don't have and some of you do have on the drummer.
Yeah, I think the short answer is no. So there are a lot of adjustments that you can make, but once you've sort of figured out what you like on the hammock and once you've mastered the technique, then it's always the same. And part of the reason for that is that we have the ridge line and we have the suspension system that is very intuitive, and we try to make it so that the setup is easy. And with the sleeping pad pocket, the pad always stays the same place, and you have the same comfort level every time. So it's more on the getting used to it parts. So once you buy it, as long as you set it up in the backyard and you watch some of our videos or read a user manual, usually you have a really good experience. And it takes maybe a couple of nights getting used to it, That's also the feedback that we've gotten from our customers, that you know, a common mistake is that a lot of people say that after their first night, they woke up in the foot box. And that's also something that we see a lot, because people are on transverse hammocks like we have. People are, you know, a bit skeptical, so that they don't want to go far enough towards the head end of the hammock. So they actually, they think they're flat, but they're lying, you know, in an incline towards the foot box. And then once you fly down, so it's just important to go far enough towards the head end. And that's a common mistake. So people usually get that after a few tries.
Now, also, since you're using a pad instead of using an underquilt, do your arms get squeezed and cold sometimes, like if you're using a pad in a gathered end hammock, because you don't have your underquilt coming up around your shoulders?
No, that's a common idea that we have problems with that, but actually it's the opposite. So in our hammock, you don't have any shoulder squeeze, and you're still lying on the pad, or your shoulders are lying on the pad, and the side panels are far enough to the sides that they don't touch your shoulders. So you don't have the shoulder squeeze. And also, you know, we don't recommend using underquilts with our hammocks, and it's not necessary. You could fit an underquilt somehow if you go winter camping, but then you could also use an insulated pad and have the same effect. So the whole underquilt thing, it's a difficult topic, but say here in Norway, we don't have so many questions regarding that, because people are more used to using pads, and we didn't have a large underquilt community, to put it that way, before recently.
Right. Now, how does it perform in the cold weather? Or even in the two ends of the spectrum, you're really hot or you're really cold weather.
I'd say maybe it performs perhaps better in the really cold end of the spectrum, in terms of, as long as you have a good pad, it works great. As with hammocks, it's not necessarily a storm shelter. So if you're going on a really tough winter trip, then of course you can bring a tent, or you should at least have some kind of winter hammock setup. Whereas if it's really hot and, you know, you have sunshine and, as we say here in Europe and Norway, 35 degrees, which is the Celsius degree, then, of course, you can become a bit sweaty, and you can have condensation against the sleeping pad. So there are pros and cons. Mostly it works. We've used it in all kinds of conditions, and it's working well for us.
Very cool. Yeah. Can you use it without a pad at all in when it's 35 or as warm as that?
No, without a pad, you don't get the flat lay. You could use it as a sort of, camping chair and some kind of configuration, but it's not for sleeping. Definitely not.
Okay. Got it. So do you guys peruse the hammock forums community at all? Do you monitor the threads there about your product and such?
Yeah, so that's Mr. Mail's table again. So I usually stop by hammock forum as often as I can, or every time I'm at work, just to check the regular hammock threads. I know that the biggest thread is probably the drinking the Kool-Aid thread.
Did you have to do any research to figure out what that was about?
No, we kind of knew what that was about from the start. But there's been a couple of other threads as well. So I don't know. I think maybe the guys who started that thread, I started a new updated thread now. So it's easy.
Yeah, for the XL.
Yeah, so it's easy for people to follow, and then it's been a thread about the scam that we touched upon, and then it's been, and I know Shug also posted a thread on his Excel review, and so we tried to be there, but we tried to not be too loud in the in the comment sections, because we don't want to be pushy. We just want to be there in case someone has an issue or a problem and we can help them. Then we're gonna be there. But otherwise, we're just gonna stand by and watch and listen to the community, kind of get the temperature of what's going on.
Is there a separate, I guess, community that you use for learning about how to improve your product? I mean, you're on version 3.0 now on your product, so going through those iterations, you must be doing it from customer feedback in some way. Is that usually one-to-one, or is that feedback from the Hammock forums, or do you have another resource for learning about how to make improvements to your product and getting feedback from customers?
Well, I can start by answering, like, if we have a resource for getting feedback in, we don't have like a set form for giving us feedback, but what I try to do is kind of filter. If we get a lot of different questions regarding stuff and we get feedback regarding certain topics, I try to kind of make an Excel sheet where things pop up and kind of bring it forward to Jonas in small drips at the time, because he's really focused when he does his product development. But but for example, with the Drummer XL, that was kind of something that we had to do because we had so many people reaching out to us about when are you going to make a Drummer XL and when is it coming and how long is it now, and then just constantly asking us questions about it, then it becomes a top priority for us to do. So when enough people ask questions and we feel like this is certainly something that we have to give back to the community, then we're going to do it. So
yeah, that must be so strange to have your product development driven so hard by people who are really demanding something that you don't have.
Yeah, but then again, we're lucky to have people who are interested in our company and want us to make the product for them. That's just a big compliment from the community. So
yeah,
it's only positive.
I would say we generally try to stay in touch with our customers and followers. We have been doing that in a lot of ways, including we had an equity crowdfunding campaign. So, So we got 100 outdoor enthusiasts as investors, small investors, but they're really enthusiastic and providing us feedback all the time. We raised about $500,000, US dollars.
Wow.
That was a really nice experience. It was exclusive to Norway, like the first investment round, but based on the experience, if we'll do it again, I think we'll do it internationally. And we always use the community, like for when we launched the Drummer XL campaign, we've had four long fans running tests all summer. So, we kind of try to involve people in many ways at all times.
So now, after the XL campaign is all completed and all, do you have any ideas for any new products coming out?
The $1 billion question.
we do have plans, for sure. What's really interesting is if we look back last year, we launched Segel, which is our gathered end hammock. And what was really funny, we tried to do like our own special setup with a super lightweight version, including suspensions and everything. But our customers and followers, they have expectations from us because of the Drummer. Mm-hmm. So they certainly expect something revolutionary at all times. So
puts a lot of pressure on you.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure on Jonas. Jonas.
Yeah. Now we're talking about product launches, so I'm not allowed to speak because we always get into trouble. So
the thing is that we're gonna launch. We are pretty hopeful that we're gonna launch some cool stuff in 2019. So stay tuned.
Oh, gonna have to have the Kool-Aid Drinkers Thread 2019 all ready to go.
Yeah.
we brew our own hammock beer as well, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How does one get a sample of that?
One of our investors, he actually operates a brewery, so he's making hammock beer for us.
That's fantastic.
That's super cool. Actually, I'm actually very jealous.
Yeah, our office is open, so if you ever come to Norway, come by for some custom Amok hammock beer. Served in the new Rahmer samples in the beer holder, of course.
What we can say is that we'll definitely stay in the hammock niche in the foreseeable future. We got enough ideas to.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask about that. The whole, I guess, camping experience, because you're in Northern Europe, I'd read a lot about how the law is so different in terms of how it applies to land use in Norway. Like England, I think just a few years ago, passed some laws that allowed certain types of right-of-way for walkers, but not necessarily campers. And I know here in the U.S., we have some freedom on national and state forests and some of the wild lands. And Canada and the U.K. have some access, well, Canada more for the Queensland. But I remember reading that in Norway and I think in some of the other Scandinavian countries, like maybe Denmark, the way that you have access to land for use is very different. I'd like to hear more about your own experience.
Yeah, I would say we are super lucky in Norway. I'm not entirely sure, but I think it's mostly the same as you say in Sweden and Denmark as well. And that is that we can actually hike and camp on everyone's property as long as you're not putting your tent up next to a house or on farmland. So basically it's called allemansretten, which is everyone's right in English. So it's impossible to translate, but it means that there's no such thing as trespassing. So you can go wherever you like. That's the main part of it. And we're also kind of lucky when it comes to like having a bonfire between April 15th and September 15th. You're not supposed to like light up a fire if it's very dry, but It's up to everyone to. You are allowed to put up a bonfire wherever as long as it's safe, and it's your subjective. You have to consider where you put it up and if it's safe. So we have a lot of freedom, but it comes with a responsibility as well. So it's been really warm in Norway this summer, and then there's been like restrictions, but in general we can do whatever we like, but it's also within the leave no trace spirit. Because you're not allowed to tamper with nature in any way. So leave it the way you did, and you're all good.
That's interesting. Now, this idea of everyone's right to access the land, how does that affect the establishment of like trails, for instance? Like here in the U.S., once right-of-way is established, oftentimes after that, somebody, that the group that manages the right-of-way will provide a trail so that people can use that land. If you essentially have access to all land, does that diminish the number of established trails that are available, or does that increase the number of established trails, or how does that work in terms of hiking and, like, I guess what we might consider longer distance hiking, where people might want to rely on a trail?
No, it doesn't really affect that. That's also because here in Norway, one of the largest organizations in terms of numbers participating, and also on
one of the largest voluntary organizations in Norway. It's actually the Norwegian Tourist Association. That's what they call themselves, or DNT. That's the short name for it. They have a huge members base that people pay to become a member of, and a lot of people who are into the outdoors are members there. So they have the responsibility to put up trails and mark the trails each year in the whole of Norway.
Wow.
They do a really good job, and we're really lucky to have them.
Yeah, trail maintenance is a task that I have a great deal of respect for. Mark and I do some hiking and backpacking, and it always amazes me how much work must go into making the trail and making sure that it's done right, so that it won't wash away after the next storm and stuff like that. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is a lot of work, but I think that the association would be able to work without the voluntary work that is being put down. So people go on trips just to mark the trail, and they do it on their free time because they just want to help out. And that's like a big deal here in Norway, just doing things to help out or do it voluntarily. That's a big part of our culture, I think. So
yeah, great. A lot of our trails are maintained by volunteers as well. They're just, you can't rely on the government to do everything for you.
No, you can't, certainly.
Now, with as busy as you guys are, do you guys still get to go out camping at all?
Well, I can start because I do go camping a lot still. I have to do it less now, but not because of the amount of work, because I have a girlfriend who thinks I'm away all too much. But I didn't have
welcome to the club.
The city of Oslo. I had 3 weekends from December through May in Oslo, and other than that, I was away either camping or ski touring. So I camp a lot. Yeah.
So
yeah, and then you guys can take an answer for you.
Yeah. Okay. So Jonas here. Not that much camping anymore, actually. Just a bit too much work. But I spent a lot of time sailing the past year. And I live on a sailboat here in Oslo, which makes access to the sailing trips very easy. I can just go on a trip after work or in the weekend. So I do that a lot. I still go on hunting trips, and I try to spend as much time as possible outside, but it's it's definitely the workload is making it a bit more difficult. And in terms of hammock camping, I often get the question, how many nights do you sleep every year in the Dramor hammock? And it's not that many, actually, maybe perhaps 10 even. And one of the reasons is that I don't sleep that well in my own hammock.
That's weird.
So, yeah, you can quote me on that. It's okay. Well, the
reason is that, you have to edit that out.
No, that's okay. It's the reason is I'm a little bit of a perfectionist. So usually when I'm lying in the hammock, I'm always thinking like, okay, how can we, should we move the seam a little bit? Maybe some different colors here. Is this seam correct? And it's always like micromanagement. So as long as I'm tired, then it's okay. I fall asleep at once. But if I'm not that tired, I start thinking about improvements and new ideas, and then I never sleep. So,
yeah, I'm probably the lucky one throughout our 5-year history at Amok, because I'm the one who have gotten to test all of Jonas's prototypes, and it's been up and downs, but mostly positive experiences. So I've been hammock camping quite a lot, but the last 2 years, unfortunately, less, because as you're saying, we're quite busy, and also our summer months are our busiest months naturally. So every season is mostly camping in spring and autumn. So,
now, what's your guys' outside of taking out of how busy you are and all, ideally, what's your favorite types of camping? Do you like to do the winter camping in the summer, or what time of year, or even places to go do you like to go to the most?
My favorite is definitely September and October. When it gets darker, the air gets cooler, and I'm also hunting a bit, so heading out during the autumn, that's my perfect time of the year.
Yeah, I'm gonna say the same. So September, October, in the mountains here in Norway, the colors change and you have more reds and orange colors, and it's just more comfortable temperature. And for me, I have a few friends that I always go hunting with, and become a tradition. And it's it's a time to think about the summer and prepare for the winter as well. And that's my favorite time of the year for camping.
Well, I'm a sucker for winter camping because I just love snow so much. So I don't know. I always dread the day that I know that summer is coming. So that's because I love skiing so much. So winter camping is probably my favorite type of camping. And then it also is that much more rewarding to go to bed when the fire is out and it's a little bit cold, and it's just fantastic to get into your sleeping bag.
Yeah, it's always nice. You can always put more clothes on to get warm, but there's only so much you can take off.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, whenever we do these interviews, I always like to kind of finish off with a little bit more of a personal question. So for each of you, Jonas Steiner and also for Diedrich, if there was one thing that you could share or teach the world, what would it be?
Ooh, tough question. I think I can start. So I think I would say I would wish that everyone had the experience of sailing. And by that, I mean the feeling that you get when you're on a sailboat. Maybe you're on a night watch, you're crossing an ocean or something like that, and the engine is turned off, and there's just the sails propel you and the wind, and it's just quiet. And then you feel it's a very good connection with nature, and you have, you're offline just thinking about your life. And it's, for me, that's a Zen moment.
I would like to say ask people questions. That's one thing I've really learned by starting a company, is that you know so little. So everything you can do is continue ask people questions, even if you feel stupid, which I do many times every day, but it certainly helps you progress.
What I would like to teach the world? Probably I would like to teach the world to enjoy skiing as much as I do. No, wait, I don't think that, because not too many people to be able to ski.
There's only so much room. There's only so much room on the lift.
Yeah, or in the backcountry for that matter. Probably teach people to just stay away from the mountains in the winter so I can have the snow to myself.
Now, after that, we always like to a lot of times finish up with a off-topic discussion where everybody gets to go and just give answers, all five of us now. Now, everybody has, the couple items, if they've been camping their whole life, or even when they just started, ideas or the little gadgets or anything that they've always, they remember. Do you have any camping stuff that you grew up with that you still use, or just, or even if it's just sitting in a closet in the basement or something. Let's start with Diedrich.
Yeah, so I actually do. I have these small knitted gloves without fingers on. I think they're called, in Norwegian, they're called pulsvarmere. I'm not sure if it's directly translated pulse warmers. So you don't have fingers on them, but they're hand knitted in wool. And I got them, it's actually my father's. So he got them when he was 25 years old. And he got me when I was when he was 26. So they have been around for a long time. And I usually bring them during autumn or when I go winter camping because they keep your hands warm. But then you can use your fingers to do work that's not easy to do with thick gloves on.
And then Steiner, how about you?
I can at least think of a couple of things. It's my old regular foam pad, which I use by the bonfire, and it's really smelly. And I also got quite a lot of fishing gear. It seems like the fish, they eat the same now as they did 20 years ago.
And then Jonas.
Yeah, I can just start off with a comment on Diedrich's item, because I have the same thing. I got them in the army. We call them alkishansker, which means like drunkard's gloves. That was just my first, that was just an input. But the item that I have that I still use, that's actually a lure box, like fishing gear box, that I've had for maybe since I was 7 or 8 years old. And as opposed to Steinar, I tend to lose my lures a lot, so they're not the same, but the box is still there. And I have a lot of memories with the box, so I'm quite happy with that.
That's cool. And then Jonathan.
I a couple of years ago, I would have said I still have the Swiss Army knife, the Victorinox knife that I bought. It was one of the first pieces of gear I ever bought when I was 12 or 13, and I can't say that anymore. I gave it to my son, and he uses it. When I go camping with my family, I used to camp with my family when I was a kid as well, when I was a child, and I still actually have the cooking stove, the camp stove that my father had used. It's an old green two-burner Coleman stove. It works on white gas, which nobody likes to use anymore. It's a gasoline stove as opposed to propane. And the thing is just bomb-proof. I don't know why it still works and why it hasn't exploded in my face. But I still cook on that stove. And it's the stove that, you know, my father used to cook when we would go camping. And it's kind of cool. It still works. And they still sell it. It's the Coleman one. And it's actually now a premium stove, which is really interesting. Like, it's at the high end, and I have a feeling it was kind of at the middle to low end, you know, when I was a kid. It was just kind of like the stove everybody had. So it's kind of cool. It's neat that I'm able to use the same gear that my father used to feed my family.
Huh. That's pretty cool.
So how about you, Mark?
I think I do have a bunch of stuff. I do have probably my two biggest things, and I semi-use them. I do have my Swiss Army knife that was given to me by my aunt, who was working for Lilco at the time, which is going back years ago, which that stood for the Long Island Lighting Company. It's the electric company down on Long Island, New York. And that was given to me by the company for getting my Eagle Scout and Boy Scouts. They always gave one. And it's a regular Swiss Army knife, and it's just got the Wilco emblem on it and all. But then besides that, my old Eureka tent, which you might have remember me, Jonathan, carrying on the first backpacking trip we did with the boys, which was using that throughout Boy Scouts because I didn't like the dome tents that the troop was using. and it's still, the stitching is starting to spread a little bit on it, but thing still works, and it's probably 30 years old now. But I rarely use it because I'm in my hammock, or it's just not a backpacking tent. That thing, it's like 7 pounds. It's heavy as hell for a 2-person tent. So I try not to use it unless it's car camping. And that's my stuff.
Cool. Jonas and Steiner and Diedrich, Mark and I are really grateful that you took some time to tell us a little bit about yourselves and what you're doing over there at Amok Equipment, especially, accommodating the time. I think this is probably time when you ought to be working, and instead you're having fun talking to us. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Before we close off this, we almost forgot the giveaway.
Oh, okay.
I'm just going to go ahead and reach out to everyone who's listening out there. If anyone wants to win a Dromer XL prototype as being sent straight from our office here in Norway, they can go into our YouTube channel. And if they mention your podcast, Hang Your Own Hang, in the commentary field of vlog episode, Keep It Sexy Stupid. That's the name of the vlog episode. And make a comment in that on that vlog episode. We will draw a winner randomly on September 3rd. So that will be our third XL hammock that we will be giving away in September. Yeah.
I will add a link to that so that people can click on it directly from our show notes.
Great.
So our listeners will have easy access to that, and they can go and add a comment. If they don't have a YouTube account, would they be able to make a comment in the hammock forums on the episode notes?
So what you can also tell them that we have a newsletter. If they sign up there, you can also win free gear every month. But then if they are on Facebook or Instagram, you can also join the competition there, because we will draw one from YouTube and one from Facebook and one from Instagram. But maybe we can do it so that they comment on the people that don't have YouTube but comment on your post. If they do that, we can put it in an Excel sheet and pick the names randomly. Yeah. So that would work too, I guess.
Sure.
So yes,
that would be cool.
Just edit out all the other nonsense that I was blabbing about.
So, Mark, one of the things I was thinking about last month, you had your new bling for your ridgeline for your tarp.
Yep.
And I think it's interesting, like, how there are some people who are kind of purists who like their Prusik or climb heists, and they like to do, they like to know their knots, kind of the nerds. Mm-hmm. And then there's certainly people who swear by kind of the bling, so to speak, like the Dutch flies and stuff like that. And it's kind of interesting to see how, maybe not that there's two camps, but it seems like there's kind of a growing space for shortcuts that lets people avoid doing knots.
Yeah, and actually, it was a few days ago, I believe I saw, now I don't remember if it was on one of the hammock groups on Facebook or on the forums. Somebody posted, they're like, yeah, I just took some line and hung up my tarp in whatever amount of time. What's with all the bling and all the gadgets and all this? And it does bring up some. I mean, personally, I do have a lot of bling, and it just makes it easier. But at the same time, I think bling's a preference, but knots are important.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that, if you lose your line, you're sort of screwed.
or if you forget it when you go camping,
yeah, that you're sort of SOL. But
At the same time, if you lose your bling, but you don't know your knots, you're SOL again. But if you do know your knots, you know, just because you lost, or it's easy to improvise if you don't have your bling. But right. If you don't know knots, you're sort of tough, especially if you just try and wing it and just wrap the rope around and you end up doing some sort of knot that gets wet and shrinks. And next thing you know, you're frustrated in the morning and just cutting it off the tree.
That's funny. So you're kind of the GPS versus compass school of thought with knots, that you really should know the knots and even maybe have some experience with them, but the bling is a nice way to avoid having to deal with it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's something good to have. So the knots are good to be able to fall back on. Knowing your knots, you can fall back in case, you know, you lose some. Even though, I mean, they are pretty much attached to your ridge line. They're there all the time, but, you know, prepare for the worst, hope for the best. And I especially like them, especially in the cold weather, when you're trying to deal with, you know, wearing gloves and fiddling with your hands with knots. Sometimes, you know, the Dyneema, the Zingit and everything, that's, you know, it's small. Sometimes it's tough to grasp it without taking your gloves off.
Yeah, that is true. It does make it a little bit more convenient. I mean, I know the big places for, I guess what you'd call bling are, on the ridge line, you know, like either the fleas or the stingers.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the tarp tie outs, that's another big one.
Yep.
You've got the
fleas.
Yep. The fleas. And you've also got the, whatchamacallums for your, tarp now.
Yeah. The Tato tarp connectors.
Yeah. The tarp connectors. So you don't have to deal with tying a prusik and stuff.
Yep.
And certainly I think I've seen a lot of people with their Dutch hooks or whatever, so that they don't have to use a carabiner or whatever at the end of their straps. You know, so it doesn't seem like it's a thing that's going to make anything lighter. It's mostly just a convenience thing. Just to kind of make your life a little better.
Yeah. Yeah. But at the same time, it's, you know, it's one of those things. Sometimes it's good to just do both, or even, you mm-hmm. know, try the knots sometime just to keep them refreshed in your mind, so in case you do need them, you know, same thing, preparing in case they're not there, or you gotta tie you know, like last time, wasn't it with the girls' ridge line for their tarp, we had to splice pieces of rope together because it was just a yep. little too long. And, you know, knowing a knots to be able to do that, to come into that situation, it's instead of walking around for another 20 minutes looking for the right trees, we were able to find those.
So being able to connect a couple of bowlines together to extend the length of your rope, and then being able to take them apart in the next morning.
Right.
You know, it's useful to have a little bit of basic knowledge about knots, in spite of the fact that, you know, the simple bling makes things go up quicker or whatever.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I agree. Also, if you're using one of the things too is I was playing with a new tarp last time we went out camping, and it actually didn't have nearly as much of the, I guess you'd call it bling. And actually, their instructions were to do some of those basic knots, like the knot that I learned with my Hennessy originally for my ridgeline, or for hanging the hammock. It's actually not a knot; it's a lashing,
right?
You know, where you go back and forth, you know, on a 90-degree. So I knew that, and they were actually expecting me to know how to do that particular lashing. And then, you know, I'm going and putting the tent stakes in for the corners of the tarp, and there's the instructions again, and it says do a what do you call it for a tent line? Tautline hitch.
Tautline hitch. Yep.
I'm like, oh well, I know how to do that too. It was kind of nice, actually.
Yeah.
You know, even though I use the little tarp worms, they're very convenient. But, you know, knowing how to do a simple tautline hitch, and then when it rains, knowing that I did it right, and I can kind of tension everything up in the middle of the night when I take care of nature's call was convenient.
Right, right, yeah. So that helps out. I even still sometimes if I'm in porch mode on my my tarp. I still have a couple instead of using the bling. I'm using taut lines and knots on it. So sometimes it's a convenience thing, and being able to do both depending on, you know, where I'm tying off from and how I'm setting up my tarp. So.
Yeah, I think we covered on knots before in an earlier show, but I still have to say, I mean, there's a few knots that are really useful. I mean, the bowline, you know, the butterfly and a bite to be used as part of like a trucker's hitch to be able to pull back on stuff. Tautlin is really super useful.
Yep.
The square knot is a great knot.
Yep.
And it's not just knots for nerds. These are, you know, I'll be the first to say the knots I learned dealing with hammocks are also the knots that I use when I tie stuff down on top of my car, or, you know, or I'm working with luggage or whatever.
Right. Right. So yeah, they're useful to know, you know, how many times do you pull out of Home Depot or Lowe's and you see somebody with some drywall or stuff on their top of their car, and you know, if they get more than 15 miles an hour, that thing's flying off into the car behind them because you saw the way they were putting the knots on.
Yeah, just the basic knots for scouting, I guess, if you're into scouting. If you're not, then, you know, just you know, get an app. I think there's a couple of good, I'll include a link to an app for knots. I think what is it?
I don't know.
Something with starts with a G.
I had one on my phone.
Grogs?
I don't remember. I had one that had some nice animation and everything. But I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, it's Grog. Animated Knots by Grog.
Okay.
Is the app that I've seen. And it actually shows you how to make the knots and how to, you know, and it gives you a little animation and stuff. It's really useful.
Right. So.
I will include a link to our listeners for that.
Great.
Cool. Well, I guess that does it. Go to Dutchware.com and buy all their bling.
And then get the app.
He'll take your money.
And then get the app so you know how to do the knots and can use the bling. So, Jonathan, as we close up this month's episode, we have next month coming up an exciting podcast episode. However, it's going to be a surprise.
A surprise?
Yes.
That doesn't seem right.
Would you like to know more?
I would like to know much more.
Then you're going to have to tune in next month because I'm telling nothing.
Oh, man. I can't wait that long. All right. Well, our listeners will be waiting in with bated breath as well.
Yep. Something different. Comments from our listeners this month. We got starting off Ford Body T on iTunes. He says, "New listener, I'm just getting into hammock camping. Only been on one trip so far. Spent a lot of time in my car, and music has just made me bored as of late. This is the first podcast I've listened to, and it's been great. Learned a lot of things, the main thing being I have a lot to learn about hammocks. Still only halfway through the content, but can't wait to listen to the rest."
Wow, high praise.
Yeah, first podcast he's ever listened to.
You know, this is the second person I've seen. There was somebody on last month's thread as well. Oh, because it was the DIY thread.
Yes.
And this is the second person I've seen where we've actually introduced them to podcasts. I hope that both of them find other amazing and interesting podcasts to listen to as well.
Yeah, that'd be great. So, and next one we have from One Sky, and this was in the hammock forums in response to the John and Kathy Pennell last month's or two episodes ago.
Two episodes now, yeah.
Yes. "I really enjoyed listening to these two, and of course, Jonathan and Mark. But Kathy, you get the award for toughest camper out there. Stung 30 times by hornets and still hiked and camped. I envy you. I get one sting by one wasp or hornet, and that part swells up pretty fast. Ugh. I keep Benadryl with me at all times. But it was great to hear how you both took this all on later in life, just like I have. Goes to show you, you're never too old to start something wonderful. Cheers."
Wow, that's awesome.
Yep. Yeah, that was quite a story. And I know there are quite a few people out there that it only takes one bee sting and they got to they swell up and got to get to a doctor. So
pull out the old EpiPens.
Yep, that's nothing you want to do.
All right. That was a great episode. I do want to say just a quick reminder. We have the Ultimate Hang. Derek Hansen has agreed to help us with a giveaway. So send us your hints. We've actually had a couple sent to us. We'd love to get a few more so we can have them judged. Send us your hints, kind of like helpful hints that you might not have seen done before in a graphic detail. And the best ones will send you a free copy of The Ultimate Hang, and Derek Hansen will actually illustrate it. And that will be your kind of personal 15 seconds of fame. We were going to award the winners in September, but because of our special episode next month, we're actually going to leave this one more month. So we're actually going to reveal the winners in October. Not this coming month, but the following month.
So gives you a little more time to think about some great ideas.
Darn shooting.
Yep. Thanks to all of our donors that we've had in the past. As you know, producing and hosting a podcast isn't free, so every little bit counts. Check out our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/HYOH podcast, or if you're a cottage vendor, consider promoting your products on our podcast for a few months. And that's the show for this month. As always, you can find us at www.hyohpodcast.com or on our Facebook page at HYOH Podcast. If you like what you hear, please give us a positive review on iTunes, or even better, you can buy us a cup of coffee by going directly to hyohpodcast.com/donate and making a one-time donation.
And don't be afraid to tell your friends about us. You can share our page on Facebook, and you can actually even share our podcasts using your favorite podcast app. So after you've clicked on that subscribe button, which I know you all want to do, you want to go back and click on the share button and tell your best friend about how awesome of a podcast we have here.
As always, if you want to comment or have a question, please visit our Facebook page, or you can send me an email at mark@hyohpodcast.com.
And me at jonathan@hyohpodcast.com. Yeah. Finally, special thanks to Skid Von Ark for allowing us to use his music for both our intro and our outro, and to ITX for hosting our podcast. Thanks, everyone, for hanging around. My eyes, and what did I see? A man from Minnesota swinging tree to tree. A thin piece of fabric suspended in the air. Should I even try it? Or should you even dare? Had two straps and a couple of toggles. How this would even work, my mind began to boggle. Yeah.